Hello, and welcome to the Columbus Metropolitan Club on 90.5 WCBE. Founded in 1976 by 13 visionary women leaders in Columbus, Ohio, the Columbus Metropolitan Club connects people and ideas through community conversation. From its beginning, CMC has welcomed everyone. I'm Doug Buchanan, CMC's Vice President of Programming. You can learn more about CMC on our website, columbusmetroclub.org. Today's forum, Stonewall's 40 Years of Impact, was sponsored by AARP Ohio and Ulmer and Byrne. The partner for today's forum was PFLAG Columbus. CMC's annual Lynn Greer Legacy in Civic Engagement Forum, which celebrates inclusion and equity for the LGBTQ+ community, was recorded before a live audience following COVID protocols at the Boathouse in Columbus, Ohio on October 13, 2021. Stonewall Columbus was founded in 1981 to increase the visibility and acceptance of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community. Today's forum explores Stonewall's 40-year history and discusses what the future holds for Central Ohio's LGBTQ+ community. Today's speakers are Leanne Masucci, owner and principal of Masucci Law Group, Denzel Porteous, executive director of Stonewall Columbus, Jose Rodriguez, Director of Community Relations with Equitas Health, and our host, Megan Kilgore, Auditor for the City of Columbus. Let's join the conversation.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. It is an honor to be here with you today. Absolutely an honor. And this forum, of course, is named after Lynn Greer. Lynn is a founder of the national LGBTQ+ organization, the Victory Fund. She is an absolute civil rights pioneer, and she's one of my dear friends. I even brought a little piece of Lynn with me today, and this is true Lynn fashion. So let me explain. About three or four years ago, I come home from a business trip, and there's this weird package sitting on my doorstep. Now, there's no return envelope. I am in an office now, and I'm like, well, what is this? This is odd. I pick it up. It's pretty heavy. Again, no return address. I open it up. And this bag is within it. And this bag happened to be the bag that Lynn Greer carried for a majority of her career. Now, it's a beautiful Cole Haan bag. It has a lot of years still left on it. But the note that she wrote said, I've carried this bag on the steps of Capitol Hill. I've carried it in local courthouses. I've carried it in bars, and I've carried it in restaurants, and I've carried it to anyone's office who would listen to me about the importance of equality. And I have worked my entire life and have given of my money and given of my time to try and elect people like you. Please carry it forward, and please continue to remember the hard work. A lot of people are feeling that right now. And I cried that evening. I mean, it was deeply, deeply, deeply important to me to understand. And so I brought it today as a piece of good luck. This may be a little bit of a gay passing of the torch, if you will, but I carry her legacy every day, and certainly in my role as the city auditor. Today we are celebrating the contributions of Lynn, but also the amazing work of Stonewall, and to recognize its 40th year. Stonewall, huge organization, 15,000 LGBTQ+ persons and allied community members in the Central Ohio region. It serves. That's massive. And it was founded in 81 to fight for tolerance, acceptance, and basic human rights. Today, its mission is to increase visibility, inclusion, and connection for the LGBTQ community. Stonewall's physical home is, of course, in the center on high, a community center for all, but Stonewall truly resides in the hearts of all of us here on stage and countless others whose lives have been changed for the better because of its existence. Today's panel, we're going to focus on the 40-year impact of this amazing organization, and we are joined today, to my left, by representatives of its past, present, and certainly its future. As your moderator, I'm going to be completely honest. When I was first asked, I was entirely intimidated by the topics. I can talk to you for hours about the economy. I can talk to you hours for about a lot of things. But to honor the service and in the work of 40 years of what Stonewall has meant was daunting. It really, really was. In preparation, I made a lot of phone calls. I talked to a lot of the founders. I talked to a lot of the individuals who, through their kind of blood, sweat, and tears, figured out how to make Stonewall what it is today. Lynn was obviously a very important part of those conversations. Craig Huffman, Steve Schellebarger, MJ Hudson, Sue Pyle, thank you. Thank you for your time, and thank you for your honesty and for opening up to me. That was really, really important for me personally as well. And certainly all of them had very wonderful things to say about the speakers to my left. So I think let's go ahead and get started. Julie Doe Andrews is always right. It's best to start at the beginning. So I'm going to start with, well, let me tell you this. One of the people I spoke with, MJ Hudson, Mary Jo said about this individual, his courage is unparalleled. And so I pose this first question to the first trailblazer on this stage, Jose Rodriguez, to kick us off, since you were there, sir. And so my first question, Jose, tell us about Stonewall in 1981. What did it mean to you?
So I wasn't around in 1981. So I'm old, but not that old. But I can tell you about the 1990s. So I came to Stonewall when Gloria J.T. Smith, and some of you may remember Gloria. I see Carol shaking her head. Gloria was the executive director for the Columbus AIDS Task Force. And Gloria was a trailblazer, if you can think of anybody as a trailblazer. Gloria was that. Gloria was on the board of Stonewall, and as she was exiting the board of Stonewall, she called me and she said, would you be willing to serve on the board? And I said, of course I would. I was then on the board of the Columbus AIDS Task Force as well. And nothing could have prepared me for the work of Stonewall in those days. And I have a lot of notes because I made a call to my friend Phil Martin, who was the fifth executive director for, Phil's my neighbor too, but he's summering in Maine. That's another story. Anyhow, and Phil reminded me of all the important work that Stonewall did. During those days, Megan, I was also working with my friend Leanne Masucci on a project that Lynn Greer, it was her vision of working with policymakers to help reach equality, and that was a real pleasure. I see Commissioner Brown here. Commissioner Brown, without people like you, we would not be sitting on this panel today. The importance, yes. The importance of policymakers has been critical to our progress. So I just want to, and allies, so not only people like you, Megan, but also allies to the community. We could not be here today if it wasn't for all of you.
I appreciate that. During these interviews, there was a statement from, I believe it was Craig, who said, Jerry Hammond saved his life, you know. I see a lot of nodding heads, but Jerry Hammond, of course, was an extremely important figure in the right place at the right time on city council. And he was a champion of LGBT rights. And in his legacy, we still have a lot of work to do. Leanne, tell us about your initial involvement. And you have really an interesting career, a lot of different iterations. Talk us through that.
Well, first, thank you for asking me to be here, folks. I'm honored to be here. I was first introduced to Stonewall through Lynn, of course. She only needs one name, right? It's like Cher and Madonna. It's like Lynn. I met Lynn when I was coaching at OSU through a mutual friend. And at that time, coaching at OSU, all I was trying to do was stay under the radar. Okay, I was not advocating for anything or anyone other than my athletes. And Lynn, you know, you can't do that around Lynn. You can't do that when you know Lynn. So she got me involved with Stonewall, talked to the executive director at the time, who was Jeff Redfield, who I see here. And it was a complete eye-opening experience. You have to understand, I grew up in a small town in northeastern Ohio with 6,000 people. My parents were hardworking. They stayed under the radar also. I went to school at the University of Alabama. I was a Roman Catholic lesbian athlete. Okay? That didn't work very well in general. But when I, you know, So when Lynn was, you know, Lynn is just a bundle of energy. You have to do this. You have to do that. And so I followed her lead. I was very impressed by her. I was in awe of her. I respected her greatly. And so when she said, let's try to do this, let's be on the board, let's do this, let's try to start an organization that Tom and Jose and Mary Jo, we were the first iteration of Equality Ohio, and that was one of the most proud things I had done at that time. And Equality Ohio was an interesting organization because we actually got and encouraged and required policymakers and elected officials to pay us to support them. Now try and picture this. We did Equality Ohio. We had these wonderful napkins. I think I told you this story. We had these great napkins, bar napkins. I'll get to the bar part. But we had these great bar napkins that had an outline, a red outline of the state of Ohio, and the names of those folks we sponsored in their respective cities in red with a big star. And then we put those out in every bar and restaurant that would allow us to do so. And basically said to folks, these are our folks who support our community. These are like-minded individuals who we need in our corner. So that was a very extraordinary experience and one, as I said, was very much a learning experience. Through all of that, I was still at Ohio State coaching. And it was right at the time, many of you know, it became very difficult for women coaches who may or may not have been lesbians, okay? And they just started picking them off, one by one. As luck or misfortune or however, irony, I was in a situation where I had developed a very significant joint issue that made it very difficult for me to stay on the court. I was the tennis coach. I was a tennis coach for 13 years. It made it very difficult for me to stay on the court. I was thinking of how am I going to make this transition. That was my career, but I knew I was on the chopping block. So as it turned out, I was able to retire from OSU on my occupational disability. And so it was a graceful way for them to kind of sweep me aside, and it was fortunate for me. At that time, I owned a bar called the Clubhouse Cafe that I had bought from Tom and his partner at the time, and it was under – my wife and I purchased this. OSU wasn't real crazy about that either. And it was a great place. It was a safe place for folks. They could come. It was relatively dim lit. It was a coffee house bar. If you weren't a drinker, you could still come and you could have wonderful coffee. And we had a movie theater in it, and we had a living room and a dining room. And it was a place where we held so many fundraisers for Stonewall, for the AIDS Task Force. I mean, after the marches every year would end in our parking lot, and we would have pools, you know, kiddie pools where you could come and you could rest, put your feet in. But it was really a wonderful experience to have people come and feel welcome and wanted and safe. It didn't matter if you were a male assigned at birth who was dressed in female clothing. And that was big at the Clubhouse Cafe. But it didn't matter. We didn't care, and we just welcomed everyone. We had lots of straight allies. It was a beautiful experience, and I thank Tom for giving Lori and I that opportunity. You might remember David's on Main. It was prior to Out on Main. And that's who I bought the bar from, was David. And it was just a wonderful experience. So that we sold that so I could go to law school, because I felt through that experience that there was more ways in which I could help our community. And Mary Jo Hudson, being an attorney and also being one of my mentors, and my wife got tired of listening to me say, I want to go to law school. She said, you're going to be 42 whether you go now or not. And so at 39, I went to law school, and here I am. So thank you.
I want to circle back on the role the built environment has played and where the especially the bars, the locations have played in this advocacy movement. But Denzel, to round out, first of all, happy birthday. Yesterday was your birthday. And you've had also a lot of building blocks in your career that have prepared you for your present post of leadership. Talk us through that and what made you say yes to Stonewall?
Thank you. And first, thank you all so much for this wonderful opportunity to spend a little time reflecting on 40 years of what Stonewall has done in the community and hopefully for 40-plus more years of what we will continue to do in the community. I am grateful to serve as executive director in this current time and moment, a tumultuous time in our community's history here at home but across the country. And I think, if nothing more, they say that someone serves at the right time for the right moment. I do believe this is the right time for me to be here. I represent such an intersectional part of our community, of our story, of our history, of our future. And I think saying yes to Stonewall was easy. It's hopefully getting the rest of the community to understand the importance of the work that we do and why we are so importantly needed here. I originally was born in Jamaica, West Indies, to a single mother who had three older kids before me. And we moved to America in the early 80s for, you know, that vision and belief of gold streets and wonderful opportunity. My mother never graduated from high school. So one of the first things that I can remember in my experience was going to community college and watching my mom complete her high school degree, sitting in the back of the classroom and watching that, seeing how she struggled to achieve an American dream. My mother also passed away when I was 14 years old from HIV/AIDS complications, an epidemic, a pandemic that was only, of course, affecting the gay community, or so they said. And so there I was at 14, 15 years old, trying to understand where I fit into the world, understanding my own sexuality, my identity, who I was, but had to do so without a mother, with no father in sight. And I think, if nothing more, what I had to turn to at that point in time, there was no internet, or like no real internet anyway. Darn it, Al Gore. there was no internet at that point in time. But what I had to turn to, you know, were pamphlets and movies, and what you saw were pictures of LGBTQ queer folks not being accepted in spaces. I was growing up in New York at the time. After my mother passed away, I moved to Atlanta, Georgia, where it was not a haven for gay folks. I wouldn't say it still is today. But I moved into a home with my aunt and uncle who were able to open doors and opportunities for me and understanding that I hadn't before, to help me understand who I was as a queer person, as an LGBTQ person. And while I hadn't come out to them until I was a senior in high school, they made the resources available to me. They gave me the space to find out who I was and then to explore that opportunity. And through that, I became familiar with an organization called Advocates for Youth. Advocates for Youth is an adolescent sexual health reproductive organization that really focused on empowering young people to understand that they have power and they have rights. And it was through that experience that I realized that I could use my voice to help other people along their journey. And so here I am, you know, fast forward many years later, now celebrating my 41st year around. And I think what has come to me in this particular moment is that reminder that all I want to do is be happy. My mother moved to America for that belief so that I could find my happiness. And my happiness is being an intersectional person, which is being gay, which is queer, which is black, which is Caribbean, which is Jewish, which is a father as of last year, which is being a partner to my wonderful husband over there, or soon-to-be husband, and is living out as a black man in all of those spaces. And I think what we have as an opportunity in Stonewall and what has come before me have been fighters who just wanted to be happy. People who just wanted other people to be happy as well. And I think for the next 40 years of our organization's history, we'll continue to fight for people's happiness. And that is to be seen, to thrive, and to be uplifted.
That's a spectacular response. You know, I think during the span of Stonewall's 40-year existence, the city of Columbus has clearly evolved from a place where the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community has had to live in secrecy to now one of the most LGBTQ plus friendly cities in the entire country. I think the best way to illustrate that change is through the evolution of our advocacy. And, you know, I talking through these interviews and hearing Leanne talk about napkins, we've clearly gone from putting flyers on cars at 2 and 3 in the morning to having to advocate via napkins in bars and restaurants, secret conversations with elected officials, and cash only. That's something that is very clear. Everything was cash, because cash you couldn't trace. You couldn't see who the folks were who were supporting the LGBTQ causes. Craig said, Craig Huffman, one of the founders of Stonewall, told me, "We did not know to be afraid." And he also, you know, talked about really all that there could be to fear, especially in the 80s. But he just said we were young and we were impassioned and we did not want to focus on that fear. And so I want to ask maybe Jose to kind of reflect on that, if you don't mind.
Thank you, Megan. And the one story that I can tell you that I can think back of, and he talks about resiliency, and it almost feels weird that it meant so much in the 90s, but it was a project that came out of the board. We called it then the Banner Project. And that meant putting banners on High Street and Broad Street that would have a gay flag. Not much else, but a gay flag. I cannot tell you the impact that had on the community in the 90s. I mean, nowadays, we can all drive our cars with a gay flag if we want to. I have straight allies that do that. But in the 90s, to put gay flags up and down High Street, and our vision for that was, we are part of the infrastructure of the city. So why not make it visible and let everybody know that comes to Columbus that we do have a Stonewall, and that we do pay taxes, and that we own property, and we contribute to the wellness of this community. I have a background in public health, so wellness is big on in my world as well. But I remember that Saturday morning, so the Columbus Convention Bureau, the predecessor to Experience Columbus, allowed us to buy the flags. Tom Grody's mother, Annie Ames, thank you, Tom, and thank you, Annie, paid for the flags. So thank you for doing that. We could not afford them, by the way. So some of the board members chipped in, and Tom's mother took leadership in helping us fund them. So the Columbus Convention Bureau would not allow us to put the flags. They got a lot of flack. So the phones were buzzing crazy. Nobody wanted the flags. So many of us wanted them. So what we did was we decided to install them on a Saturday. So they allowed us to do that. So I can tell you the names: Michael Council, Don Loafers Weiler. Many of us followed the truck, and many of us cried, because he was really telling the city, we're here, we're queer, and we're not going anywhere. And that was a special moment, I think, for Stonewall and for all of us. It seemed so weird, but following that truck, watching those flags go up, it was covered by the news, but it was really about taking leadership and telling the world that we were here. I also want to salute Stonewall, because during the HIV crisis, they were critical. And it really speaks to the value of partnerships. And again, my training is in public health. And in public health, you never do anything alone, because you usually don't have the money. So we depend on partners to build bridges and get the work done. So we did the same thing in Stonewall. Stonewall was a safe place to come and get tested for HIV. So we planted testers there so that people felt comfortable doing that. We had support groups. We had a group of lesbians that would donate blood for people living with HIV. And I cannot say enough about the lesbian community. You know, when HIV broke, many gay men were not able to do what they wanted to do because they were afraid. And the lesbian community had no fear. They came out. They came out like nothing I'd ever seen before. And actually, women in general did. So I want to make sure that we acknowledge that work.
You're listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club on 90.5 WCBE. Today's forum is Stonewall's 40 Years of Impact. Speaking are Leanne Masucci, owner and principal of Masucci Law Group, Denzel Porteous, executive director of Stonewall Columbus, Jose Rodriguez, director of community relations with Equitas Health, and our host, Megan Kilgore, auditor for the City of Columbus. We'll return to the conversation after a short break.
This Halloween, WCBE partners with Columbus City Adventures for a haunted walking tour around the historic Fort Hays campus. Fort Hays holds 150 years of supernatural secrets, mysteries, and tragic tales of broken-hearted ghosts dating all the way back to the Civil War. You might even spot the dreaded night sentry. The Fort Hays Haunted Tours are Saturday, October 23rd and Sunday, October 31st. Information and reservations at columbuscityadventures.com.
In WCBE's podcast experience, James Bond films highlight the discussion in Back Talk and Double Take. Howard Tiersky joins Innovating Leadership, Co-Creating Our Future, to discuss how organizations can win digital customers. The Internet Says It's True examines the flu pandemic of 1918. And Prognosis Ohio returns to make sense of all the recent legislative activity at the State House. Hear those shows and more locally produced content in the podcast experience at WCBE.org.
Welcome back to the Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum, Stonewall's 40 Years of Impact. Speaking are Leanne Masucci, owner and principal of Masucci Law Group, Denzel Porteous, executive director of Stonewall Columbus, Jose Rodriguez, director of community relations with Equitas Health, and our host, Megan Kilgore, auditor for the City of Columbus. Let's get back to the conversation.
I also want to chat a little bit about the power of collaborations. And I'll tell you, I don't see that many collaborations, as many as I would like to see today as we did then. We have to go back to collaborating and getting together. I learned that from ACT UP. You know, ACT UP would protest in front of the building, but they would come in behind the building and sit down with the health commissioner and work on stuff. So it's not only about acting up in front of the building, it's really about going in through the back door and doing the work, getting the work done. And ACT UP taught me that. So we had a lot of collaborations. I remember the days in which the bar owners would get together, Leanne, on a regular basis. Unheard of today. Keep in mind the bars were a center where we could gather. The coffee table, I see Julie Applegate, who was our star at the coffee table. You could go to the coffee table in the short north, and there was a sense of community that you could go there, and that was a safe place. The same thing for the bars. The bars owners don't talk to each other today. But I remember Alice and Todd and all those great people having regular meetings. Doesn't happen anymore. So I miss those days, and I'm probably going on too long. But okay, great. I do want to say two more things about Stonewall that were critical.
In that case.
Well, you're talking about really important things, so I think it's also important to bring it up.
Thank you. So when I was a younger man and I was new to Columbus, I didn't know who to go to. And I wanted to support my community, so there was something called Stonewall News. It was a publication prior to Outlook, which I owned for about 3 minutes along with along with Lynn Greer. But it was, Stonewall News was the way we connected with each other as well. So it came out monthly, and that was extremely powerful. It was before the internet, the dark ages. But it published about 12 to 15,000. So it was our way of staying connected together. And Stonewall gave us that. The other piece that Stonewall gave us, and I'm going to do a plug for them because I love them, it's the Lavender Listings. That was the way where I got my dentist. That's who, if I wanted my deck cleaned, that's where I would go to. My insurance agent is still from the Lavender Listings. So it was a place for giving back to our community and supporting people like yourselves. So there was also a lot of allies on the Lavender listings, by the way. You allies, don't be afraid of advertising. We want to do business with you. But those two things were critical in the 90s of how we communicated and loved each other and supported each other. And the Lavender listings are still alive and well. So
I think you're hearing a lot of very personal stories about, you know, the advocates, the allies who were there for individuals. One of the things Steve Schellerbarger, I remember him saying, is that, you know, a lot of times, myself included, I was given an opportunity to come out. I created my own plan. And, you know, coming out as any member of this alphabet is the most important thing we can do. But one thing Steve said was the AIDS crisis forced us to come out. And people were not prepared for what that would mean to friendships, to their doctors, to their clergy, to anyone who was in their nuclear circles. And so staying on the theme of allyship, I'm curious, Leanne, you played a big role in Stonewall's. I have a pen on my lapel here from 1991. You served on Stonewall's board after that. But speak to other allyships in that next decade.
Well, let's see. I was on the board in from 97 through 99. So I think that at that time, the allyship, what was happening with Stonewall at that time and what I've appreciated has happened since then, is they really were focused also on educating the community on things that were changing. And we would meet at Stonewall and they would put on, you know, excuse me, group meetings, and we would talk about things, and they would ask those of us who might be in certain situations to come and talk. And this is particularly, as I'm talking about, before marriage equality, when families, you know, it struck me that Denzel said, we just want to be happy. And that's true. Families just want, you know, we pick our families, right? I mean, most of us do. We create our own families. And Stonewall was very instrumental in allowing us to explore that through different kinds of conversations. And so the allies, one of the things we did was we actually started to educate the court. And, you know, Carol Fay and I were probably two of the rebels at the court that people would see us coming and they would just kind of put their head down, you know. But what we did was we explained there are more families out there who want to be recognized and who need to be recognized, and you have an opportunity to recognize them. They can't be married, but they should be able to have legal agreements that recognize their family and respect their family. And so there was starting to be a collaboration between the enlightened judges in our court system that would listen and actually come and present on topics themselves at Stonewall. And that was very critical. And I think that one of the things we became very proud of was what I like to call in my practice creative family creations, you know, because it doesn't have to be the nuclear family that we're all familiar with. And we went from shared custody agreements with Carol, which Carol started. We went from shared custody agreements. That went all the way up to, most people don't know this, that concept went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said that was a contract between two people about a child, and that's legit. So then we knew we had a springboard, you know. And so then, I mean, I've done this court. Franklin County has been amazing. I've had some horrific experiences in other counties where I've actually had a judge say to me when we were litigating two women that had raised this child, the one woman that birthed the child then married a man and he became the stepfather. And I had a judge say to me, well, we've got this husband and wife over here who have a child, and then we've got this other thing. And so I sat on my hands and I listened, and that's what was happening. Whoa. Even 10 years ago, you know, and Stonewall has helped us with these presentations and people coming and asking questions and the members and the allies educating us so that we could continue to help educate the court. Franklin County's court, in, at least in domestic and juvenile, is amazing. Our judges are just amazing.
I'm going to ask a question of Denzel, and then I would love anyone in the audience to slowly make your way to the microphones, and we'll get ready for some audience Q&A. Denzel, you and I have talked a lot about that this is such a great moment to improve upon Stonewall's history. And you are, I believe, very deeply the right person at the right time. Talk a little bit about what lessons you think Stonewall has had to learn, has chosen to learn, and how you plan to carry that forward.
Thank you both for what you said. You know, so I'm a note taker, and I'm always connecting dots. I think what we've heard hopefully has been sort of first how, as an organization, we've continued to and have made space. And making space is essential for so many things. We've heard about how bars were spaces for gathering. We've heard about how the physical or organizational space of coming together around the HIV/AIDS crisis was important. And I think what Stonewall has done and will continue to do is sort of ensure that there's space made for these critical issues in our time. But I think what we've also seen is that we respond in time to what the community needs in that moment. And I think that's going to be something that we will continue to do, right? As our community has needed something, we have been the nexus of that creation that has spawned something else. So as we talk about organizations like Bravo and Equality Ohio, Equitas, formerly ARC, Stonewall has been at the nexus of the creation of these organizations. For good or bad, we have enabled our community to respond to what we need, and I think that's something we will continue to do. And I think the lesson that I've learned growing up as a child in the 80s, learning and reading about organizations like ACT UP, I'm reading a phenomenal book right now called Let the Record Show, so I would recommend it to anyone. I just recommend to anyone. It is 600 plus pages, so if you've got time, hopefully you can do it. But Let the Record Show is really a study in organizing. It's a reflection on how ACT UP as a group was able to come together but still be independent in its mission and its work, leading toward one thing, right? Saving lives. And here you had all of these subgroups within ACT UP still working towards a mission of saving lives, but doing that work differently and responding to what the community needed in that moment, in that way, in that time. And so I think what we learn from that moment and what we are seeing actually quite now in our existence is that organizations will continue to pop up to create what those intersectional communities need to be supported. But there should be a space where we can all come together, where we can all find unity and comfort and safety in that space. Where you should be supported with whatever ideas that you want to generate in support of helping us all find happiness in our community. And so I think that's a lesson that we have taken as a child of the 80s, as someone who had a parent who died from HIV/AIDS or complications thereof, as an individual who didn't think that they'd be sitting here on the stage, right? As a black person, as a queer black person who has been told that they shouldn't or shouldn't be in these spaces, there are a lot of lessons that I have that hopefully I will be able to impart in the community and help others find their happiness. And so I think as I'm helping guide the organization of Stonewall, those are lessons that I have, hopefully lessons I'll be able to impart to the team that we work with, but also to the community that we serve, and hopefully the volunteers that will come along and help us get that work done. You know, I think we have a really rich and storied history here in Columbus, in Central Ohio. We've inspired a lot. We've been inspired by a lot, and I'm just excited about what the next 40 years will be like.
Jane, do you have something? I'm sorry to interrupt you there.
That's okay. There are some questions, and anyone who is in the audience, please come up because we're going to be switching back and forth. And Megan, feel free to jump in with questions as well. Maybe you could just review for all of us the major impact, the changes that perhaps would not have happened if Stonewall was never founded.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's quite frankly a big question, and I think if you don't see the impact, that's sort of shocking. So when we first think about it, so Stonewall itself, the organization was founded when the Reverend Jerry Falwell was coming to town doing the moral majority push. And so if we had no organization or Stonewall Union at that time, we can only imagine what the community would have heard. They would have heard one side of an argument and then think about what would have come out of that. When we think about the elected officials that we've had in our offices here in our community, Stonewall Union used to be a 501c4 organization, and so we were actually active in lobbying and pushing and encouraging elected officials or fair-minded officials to be running down ballot or on the ballot. And so when we think about even the fact that Columbus was one of the first cities to pass an ordinance in protection for LGBTQ community members, that was Stonewall's work. When we think about Columbus Pride and the way that we come together as a community every June, that was Stonewall Columbus's work. So I think, to me, there are really significant moments in our history, in our Columbus history, that we can turn to Stonewall for recognition. But then there are many probably small moments that we just aren't thinking about, as we talked about, flags down High Street, City Hall now lights up, Rainbow, Bravo as an organization. So again, we think about these spaces. I think, again, we're at the nexus of a lot.
Why don't you finish that out?
Yeah, so one great example would be Bravo, the Buckeye Region Anti-Violence Project, which is now held at Equitas, but it had its roots on a safety group that started their work in at Stonewall Union. And keep in mind that we as queer people, especially trans folks and trans folks of color, are impacted by violence in unique ways, in ways that most other communities are not. So having an anti-violence project started at Stonewall was critical. And the fact that that work continues today continues to be of extreme importance. So I'm really proud of that work that got started by Stonewall.
And Leanne?
I was going to mention Equality Ohio, the current incarnation, you know.
There are a lot of positive offshoots.
Yeah, absolutely.
Certainly. I think that one, but for Stonewall, it's so hard to even try and come up with what that will look like. But, you know, anytime you open up the papers, you look at the press, there's still a lot to do. And it's easy to become disheartened by looking at the printed materials, the quotes coming out of the state legislature right now. That's really one of the reasons why I'm here. As auditor, I care deeply about the cost of inequality. It will set the state of Ohio back. But very, very sincerely, let us just be very hypervigilant to this and what it is doing to our economy as a state right now. But I'm here before, you know, as an elected official because, frankly, everyone else before me, I'm acutely aware I am no smarter than a lot of the individuals who have tried to run for office before. I am no better as anyone else. In fact, there have been especially some judicial candidates we were talking about before who should now be on the Supreme Court because of their legal acumen. But it just so happened their names ended with comma lesbian. And I talk about that a lot because never, to the best of my knowledge, has my name ever had Megan Kilgore, comma lesbian. And that is something to especially Tom and Jeannie, I can see that emotionally affecting you. I understand that. I recognize that. But until we have statewide protections, we can't stop. It feels okay here in Columbus, but we have a lot more work to do. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi, Jeff Redfield, member of the community since I moved here in 94, but even before that, when I lived in Dayton, would come over and became part of the community here. And just to echo some of the things, the one thing that for me Stonewall was about gathering and meeting, where you could find your community, whatever it might be, that led to a lot of other engagements. Proud member of the sports community here. The challenges that we faced at that time to find your like people, that's what Stonewall provided. And how do you talk about the history without talking about the support? Stonewall was there in supporting the sports groups when they formed. When we hosted the first gay sports national competition here at the North American Gay Volleyball Association in 98 to this summer, $11 million impact by the Gay Softball World Series here, the largest gay softball event in the history of the world. But what I reflect back on often was the Matthew Shepard crisis. And I say crisis because so much was going on, and this is what worries me still as we go forward. At the same time Matthew was murdered, there were so many other people that were not in the news. Black, African American, transgender. This has been going on for so long. And I've always said a thing about our community is that we are a microcosm of the society as a whole. All the isms within the general society are within our LGBTQ community as well. How do we look at our history and go forward to change this? We're seeing it now in the news. There's a highlight on the social media situation. Others are missing, but nobody's paying attention to that. So how do we look beyond our issues and go forward in the next 40 years of Stonewall? Thanks.
Say that Jeff was the sixth executive director of Stonewall, so thank you for your service, Jeff.
So, yeah, I was going to say this thing, dude, number six, which I love. Jeff, you know, I appreciate sort of the place where you put that time frame for me when you mentioned Matthew Shepard, because it's something I remember every year on my birthday. So Matthew was pronounced dead on my birthday. I was in college, about to turn 21. I think it was October 17th or 16th when I heard the news of Matthew Shepard being beaten to death, near death and left, right? And here I was at Kenyon College, small little liberal arts college north of here, pretty white. It was at the time. And I remember being... I used to always say I felt like a raisin in a bowl of cream of wheat there, but I remember at this moment feeling so much, the intention being sortly heightened, right? Because I was pretty out on campus. I was fairly out on campus. But I also remember being so angry because of something that you just mentioned, that I had known there were other people, black, brown, indigenous people, who had been murdered, who had been killed the same way, and no one spoke of them. And so I was torn, right? Because again, I'm turning 21. I should be happy and excited because that's a fun time. I'm also out and proud of who I am, but also really angry that why is he getting so much more attention than the other people, people like me, who have not gotten such attention. I think what we have to remember is that, our community is representative of those in leadership. Oftentimes, right? So when you don't have leaders who are intersectional, who represent the populations of the community that are most in need of support, sometimes people forget, right, that they need to turn the attention to those populations the most. So I would hope that at least during my time in Stonewall's, as executive director of Stonewall, that my intersectional identity will help ensure that we're not stepping away from the populations and people that need our support the most. It is important that we recognize and support everyone in our community, right? Because there are people who came before me who set, as my team says, the stones for us to get here. They set the bricks, and we are now stepping on their backs, their pavements, whatever they've built for us. And so I'm thankful for the communities who at the time were the ones we turned our attention to the most. But now it's time for us to turn our attention to the communities who need it as well the most. And we will. We will, at least while I'm sitting in this seat. And I hope that whatever legacy that is stays with the organization after I'm gone, right? That we understand the most important work is to support those who are most in need of supporting. I hope that stays.
Yeah. Great response.
Jane? So I'm going to ask both of these questions together because I think they can have some of the same answer. Bill Lafayette, my perception is that threats to our progress are increasing. Do you share that concern? And if so, how can we as a community preserve the progress that we have made? And then Steve Swift asks, what does Stonewall Columbus do better in representing the LGBTQ+ community that maybe other cities in the than any other cities in the U.S. And how does Stonewall work with other cities? So progress and collaboration.
I actually think they're different questions. So I'm going to disconnect them if you don't mind. So I think the first question really is passage of the Equality Act. That's on the federal level, right? I think here locally in the state of Ohio, we also have a bill that we need to pass. I can't remember the number of it, what number that bill is. But, I mean, ultimately in our state, queer identities can still be prosecuted in so many different ways, right? You can still get married and then the next day have someone fire you here in this state. These things are not okay. And I think on the federal level, if we don't have passage of the Equality Act, we're going to still continue to see that. Small changes, right, take time, and I think legislative changes, legal changes at the top will make the biggest and swiftest changes moving down the pike. So I think that's the first thing. Is passage of the Equality Act at the national federal level, but then also thinking about what we can do here at the state level to bolster those protections. You know, I think the future is singularly collaboration. I've been privileged enough to travel the country for former jobs, for my own passion and interests, and I've been able to visit, you know, a lot of the other cities that have LGBTQ centers in the country. And I love to aspire. There's no reason to not aspire. And when I think of the LA Center and the work that they do, I want to aspire to that. When I think of the New York Center and the work that they do, I want to aspire to that. We are the 14th largest city in the country. And I think that we have an opportunity to ensure that our LGBTQ community is represented in that 14th largest city population. That diversity is there. We can support it. And I see other cities that have done that. So that is the hope for the future, is that through collaboration and partnership, we will be representative of what the 14th largest city in the country should be doing when it comes to LGBTQ equality and community work.
You've been listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club on 90.5 WCBE. Today's forum was Stonewall's 40 Years of Impact. Speaking were Leanne Masucci, owner and principal of Masucci Law Group, Denzel Porteous, executive director of Stonewall Columbus, Jose Rodriguez, director of community relations with Equitas Health, and our host, Megan Kilgore, auditor for the City of Columbus. Join us next week as the Columbus Metropolitan Club hosts another community conversation. I'm Doug Buchanan. Thanks for listening.